Hi, my name is Marcelo Jauregui Volpe, and this is The Climate Divide, a new podcast from Hola Cultura, supported by Spotlight DC and the Fund for Investigative Journalism. Whether you're at home, in school, or out shopping, air conditioning helps residents stay cool during high heat temperatures. Throughout this podcast, we discuss the importance of staying cool in the heat and the impacts it can have on your health. But did you know that heat can also impact your cognitive function? In the summer of 2016, an observational study was conducted of the impacts heat can have on the cognitive function of young adults during a heat wave. The study stated how adults in the U.S. spend about 90% of their time indoors, making past heat-related health research subject to exposure misclassification, if the outdoor temperature values do not represent the indoor exposures. We spoke with one of the researchers, Jose Guillermo Cedeño Laurent, who is an assistant professor at the Rutgers School of Public Health.
The idea was to see if a heat wave in real circumstances, in real life, affected a young, healthy individuals in their cognitive function at one university campus. Some students were randomly assigned to two types of buildings, once with the air conditioning and once without air conditioning. And the idea or the plan was for us to measure the exposure to temperature, to other air pollution contaminants inside their bedrooms, along with measures of physical activity, as well as some collection of a daily log of hydration and sleeping. This was supposed to be done on a baseline period so that we could characterize how all these things measured or happened when heat wasn't extreme, and then keep the study going as temperatures went up, and then finally study people throughout the cool down period after an extreme heat event happened.
The study followed students with an average age of about 20 years that were living in air-conditioned and non-air-conditioned buildings before, during, and after a heat wave. The students had to perform two daily self-administered cognition tests for 12 days, which would access their selective attention processing speed and evaluate their cognitive speed and working memory.
So every single day, 44 students did this protocol, where they had a wearable device to measure their sleep quality, heart rate, skip, perspiration, to measure how much they were sweating, did the cognitive tests every morning in the phone, and did the via text message, the response to these sleepiness and hydration logs. So long story short is that we found that the group without AC have a very significant, substantial decrease in their cognitive function in comparison to the people that have the air conditioning.
In the study, it was found that the average difference in temperature exposures between the AC group and the non-AC group was around 8 degrees Celsius.
Throughout the heat wave, an average decline of this cognitive function was in the order of 6 to 10%, depending on the cognitive test that we were talking about. So these are meaningful numbers. These are not trivial numbers. There's obviously limitations of these things. These were acute effects measured in the morning, right after individuals woke up. So we don't know whether they extended over the entire day. And obviously, we don't know if these had long-term repercussions after the study. My particular study didn't address that question. My study design wasn't set up to do that. Yet, a body of literature has shown how there seems to be a long-term effect. I wouldn't say physiological effect that would permanently hinder your cognitive abilities, but if this is an exposure that repeats itself, then the consequences might be in educational attainment. So what other people have found is that the students in schools that don't have AC tend to do worse in standardized tests or tend to have higher rates of absenteeism. And this becomes the beginning of a series of long-term effects, especially in their economic opportunities. So one of these studies found that, for example, those students that took a standardized test in a day where outdoor temperatures were higher than 90, were like 12% more likely to fail that exam, the Regents exam in the state of New York. So that have long-term consequences into their economic life. So this is where I would say, I don't think there's that much of a need for additional research. Everything points out to be acute effects with long-term consequences.
In the study, the reductions in cognitive function were said to be attributable to an increase in thermal load and the combined influence of other environmental and behavioral factors, such as ventilation, acoustics, hydration, and sleep, that compound the effects of heat exposure in real-life settings.
We wanted to understand whether there was just the direct association between temperature and cognitive function, or if temperature modified the sleep, and then sleep was also associated to cognitive function, but via these temperature exposure. So we did that, and for example, sleep seemed to be explaining like 8% of the effect that we found. So I think we presented in the paper that for every 1 Celsius degree increase in temperature exposure, people lost 2.4 minutes on sleep on average. It's almost 3 minutes. So you think that for that 8 Celsius degree differential, you would be losing about half an hour per day of sleep, which is quite a bit. You know, the non-AC group had only 2 main ways to adapt into the heat exposures. One was opening windows, and the other was using fans. So if you have been around a baby, one of the techniques to actually make them sleep is to use these white noise generators. So we think that the constant frequency of the sound made by the fans was actually helping a little bit, because when we measure constant high noise levels, there was an actual positive effect on the cognitive function. So they did a bit better than those that didn't experience that high noise scenario.
The study noted that some of the adaptation differences between the AC and non-AC groups also had to do with environmental exposures, such as low ventilation rates in the AC group, which led to significantly higher CO2 concentrations during sleep periods. It was said that low ventilation rates and CO2 concentrations have recently been associated with impairment in multiple domains of higher order cognitive function.
Despite the fact that we showed these benefits from air conditioning, I think no one thinks that that should be the solution to replace the problems that we're facing. We need new technologies that are able to be more sustainable, that are able to be more affordable, not only in their capital costs, but in the maintenance cost. And certainly, AC units, in many cases, usually the ones that we have at homes, like those window units, they don't ventilate. So they don't bring in outdoor air. And to be more efficient, they recirculate the air that has already been conditioned. So if you saw there was this higher CO2 concentration on the AC buildings, and that's why the air quality actually, in terms of ventilation rates, was worse. Now, that paper precedes COVID. Right now, we know a lot more about the importance of ventilation. And now you can also think of how, in this integral strategy on how we adapt our buildings, we need to think of new technologies that can provide both things, the temperature control, but also the enhancement or improvement of indoor air quality.
Alongside the heat impacts on cognitive function, the students also seem to show physiological signs of adaptation to the extreme heat wave, which brought up the question if humans are able to adapt to some degree of heat.
During the study, we were able to measure not only cognitive function that seemed to be declining more and more as the heat wave progressed. So if you see some of those graphs, we show their reaction times, and the difference between the AC and the non-AC group kept growing after the days of the study. But when we looked at the heart rate that we also measured every single, I think, second for all these 12 days, you can see how it peaked at day 3 or so of the heat wave. And then it came back to the same heart rate levels before the beginning of the heat wave. So there seems to be some physiological signal of adaptation to the extreme heat. This is one of the main questions right now in the field. I think in this case, we're young individuals, and that would be the exact same behavior that you would expect from any event that challenges the homeostasis of the tendency of the body to recuperate, right? Whether it's an infection or it goes through a phase of inflammation or body reaction, but then a healthy body tends to recuperate. But in terms of the climate science, one of the things that we care about is to be able to make predictions. And many of these forecasts of what would be the effects sometimes disregard whether we're going to be able to adapt or not to new climate regimes. It's a big question because this was just adaptation during a 12-day period, and we're talking about long-term adaptation. So I think there is an area specifically, or where I would say we need a lot more research to actually narrow it down.
This is The Climate Divide, a new podcast from Hola Cultura, supported by Spotlight DC and the Fund for Investigative Journalism. This podcast has also been made available to listeners of WAMU 88.5, NPR's Consider This Podcast, and WTOP Radio. The impact heat can have on cognitive function is very serious, especially in schools without working AC. Back in May, WUSA 9 reported how many DC public school teachers and parents were asking district leaders to help fix broken heating, ventilation, and air conditioning units, also known as HVAC units, in their classrooms via social media. We spoke with Elizabeth Corinth, the local school's advisory team, or LSAT, chair for school within school at Godin Elementary School.
I believe there were 5 or 6 rooms where the AC units were out. There were like 5 classrooms and then a couple rooms that actually the unit covered like 3 different administrative offices or teachers' offices. So all of those rooms, the AC units were out, and it was right during those couple days of really high heat that spiked up. And so the classrooms were, I believe, at sometimes upwards of 90 degrees inside the classroom, according to the thermostat. So they had put in the work order, you know, the previous week when things were still fine, but they hadn't been repaired or addressed by the time the heat hit. And so they had those couple days. They brought in temporary units, but those really struggled to beat the heat. So the classrooms were still upwards of 80 degrees and the offices were still upwards of 80 degrees. Eventually they did, you know, we did a lot of advocacy in terms of reaching out to ANC and council members and tweeting. And so we did get kind of an outpouring of response.
Elizabeth recalls the air conditioning being broken near the end of May, and through social media, she decided to research if her school's HVAC issues were an isolated problem. There she found the District Department of General Services public online database that shows the current amount of work orders open for HVAC units in DC public schools.
I was tracking because we were trying to see what was going on across the district, you know, whether this was an isolated issue. We suspected not, so we were kind of tapping into what other people were saying about it. And someone on Twitter had posted a link to the list of work orders, and there were something like 700 unaddressed, you know, unresolved HVAC orders across the district.
The Department of General Services, or DGS, provides maintenance for DCPS school buildings, including the Duke Ellington School of the Arts, where Hola Cultura intern Talia Jackson attends school.
There was a whole week, I think, during the first week of June, where we just didn't have AC. It wasn't working anywhere in the building. And so my teachers and other staff members had to bring in either their own fans from home or spend pocket money to bring fans into the classroom so kids would not be dying of heat. Because you'd walk in the building and it'd be the same temperature as it is outside. So outside, it was probably 80, 90 degrees. And then inside, it was probably around 80 degrees.
Talia recalled a girl fainted inside the school after a photography field trip.
We were scheduled to have a field trip, and the freshmen in my department were supposed to go one day, and then the juniors were going to go another day. And so the freshmen went out first. It was a really hot day outside, and so they walked maybe a mile into Georgetown and then came back. And as soon as she got back in the building, I think after 15 minutes they came back, she fainted. So they had to have an ambulance come to the school. She was carried out on a stretcher because there was no relief between being outside and being inside the school, because it was the same temperature and there wasn't really a place to cool off besides drinking water. So medical assistance was called. She was fine afterwards, but it ended up leading to us not being allowed to go out anymore until the AC was fixed. So our photography field trip was postponed, and the school realized that it was actually a very serious problem.
Talia shared how HVAC system failures were a recurring problem, and that faculty, cleaning staff, and security guards would come into classrooms to check if everyone was okay.
It happens every year. I mean, at the start, when we were first coming back from the pandemic, I remembered we also didn't have AC. and they were handing out water bottles at school, like plastic water bottles to everyone at school. And it happens every year. It happens so often, it's kind of upsetting because it's like I'm sitting in this $6 million building that the whole city paid for to learn, and we don't even have functioning AC. At home, we have the little window units because my house is really old, so we don't have a working full house AC unit. So we had to buy those a couple years back because the heat was really bad. And I mean, during that week of school, I would be so hot at school and I would just get so tired because your body is constantly trying to like self-regulate the heat. And when there's no relief from that, yeah, it does take away from learning. It does take away from feeling relaxed at school because I would go to school, be hot, go outside to go home, be hot, and then come home and be hot. So there was really no break. So I think a lot of that last month of school where the AC was broken and at home where I don't have AC, I was just sleeping all the time. I wasn't getting assignments done. Even in school, I was sleeping. I had no motivation, wasn't able to focus because my body was so tired from dealing with all of that heat.
Talia says her school was able to fix their HVAC systems after 2 weeks. When we spoke with Elizabeth Corinth, she couldn't recall the exact time frame where school was without AC, but she shared how an LSAT teacher union rep felt that the school hadn't addressed the problem and wanted to use whatever additional measures that were in her disposal to get action.
We had parents at our school who are involved in DC politics, so they have personal connections and they just know who, you know, we had people we could call who said, okay, yes, tweet this person, email that person, right? Which I didn't even know, but I knew who to turn to, and there were people within our school with that knowledge and with those connections. So we were able to, and we have a communications volunteer who's really savvy with social media and has been doing the work along the way to be connected and to be visible and things like that. So I definitely think we had advantages in terms of being able to get a response. And we did see like a really significant response that I cannot imagine was being seen at other schools. So that does seem to indicate to me there is that lack of equity and just the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And we, on the one hand, really wanted to advocate for our own students and teachers and to make sure that they were in a reasonable situation, working and learning situation. But on the other hand, we didn't want to be taking those resources, especially from schools that really need it and that have way more issues and no additional space to swing into. So that was like a balance that we were really struggling with and shouldn't have had to be in that position of saying, oh no, if we advocate for our school, then who are we taking away from? There should be enough resources to make sure that everybody who needs the help is able to get it. And the system should be set up to prioritize the schools where it's needed the most, the schools that don't have alternative solutions as easily accessible. So it shouldn't be that way. We shouldn't, as a school, have to be reaching out in an emergency basis on a personal level via social media and emails to get issues addressed. And that shouldn't be what dictates who gets results and who doesn't.
Another school that had HVAC problems is Elsie Whitlow Stokes Public Charter School. This school is located in Brookland, in Ward 5, and was one of the hottest neighborhoods when Hora Cultura did their heat mapping in 2021. To learn more about what it has been like dealing with broken AC units, I spoke with Lisa Volpe, a teacher at this school who also happens to be my mother.
Yes, the air conditioning has gone out on days that it's been very hot and it gets very uncomfortable.
When the AC goes out, what procedure do you go to get it up and running again?
Usually what we do is we have a building engineer and we'll contact him, but it takes a while to get it either back on or get it fixed because we can't go to the wall and just touch the thermometer. Those are all locked and controlled. So I think I know what we do is we'll just call the building manager, but there's lots of classes. It's pre-kindergarten through fifth grade, so there are a lot of us. So it might be an hour or two until he gets to it, and sometimes it may not be until the next day.
What do you think the impact of these hot days and this AC system that's not working properly, like what do you think the impact is on, I guess, your students and their learning in the long term?
I do believe that it has a large impact on their cognitive abilities. It's hard to focus for them, especially after later morning and it's hot. And let's say if they've been outside, they've been running around and they come back in and it's over 80 degrees in the classroom. It's hard to even keep a 5-minute focus for all the kids. So it just seems ineffective to keep teaching on a day that's that hot.
We're only a few weeks away from the start of the school year, and local politicians are making a push to ensure that students are able to learn in a safe environment. In the next episode, we'll reach out to the DC government to find out about the work that's currently underway to ensure schools are ready for the start of the fall semester. The Climate Divide is edited by me, Claudia Peralta Torres, and Jose Luis Mendoza. Additional interviews were conducted by Lucia Matamoros, Talia Jackson, Jennifer Alfaro, and Barbara Ron Giron. Christine McDonald is the series editor and executive director of Hola Cultura. This project is supported by Spotlight DC, the Capital City Fund for Investigative Journalism, and the Fund for Investigative Journalism.